Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI.
When we talk about the absolute cornerstones of literary modernism, you really have to start with James Joyce. He's just this colossal figure, isn't he? Born 1882, and despite, you know, spending most of his adult life away from Ireland, he was completely obsessed with one place.
Dublin. Utterly obsessed. I mean, the detail is legendary. Joyce himself supposedly claimed that if Dublin were ever completely flattened, you could rebuild it brick by brick just using Ulysses.
Right, the pubs, the street signs, everything. And that book, Ulysses, published in 1922, well, more than just a novel. It was a genuine literary earthquake, famous for its linguistic acrobatics and, of course, that revolutionary use of stream of consciousness.
Which completely shattered how stories were told before. And we should remember, it wasn't just hailed as genius. It was controversial.
Mm.
Hugely so. Banned for obscenity in the U.S. and the U.K. for, what, over a decade?
Yeah, a long time. But what gets me is how this massive complex structure is built on something so simple.
Mm.
The whole point, really, is to take the mundane, everyday life and elevate it, give it the weight of epic myth.
Exactly. It tracks the inner lives, the thoughts and feelings of three main characters over just one single ordinary day. Thursday, June 16th, 1904.
And that date, June 16th, that's everything for Joyce fans. Bloomsday, celebrated all over the world now. The conflicts in the book aren't, you know, epic battles. They're internal. They're existential. People searching for meaning, for connection, feeling lost, alienated from home in this modern world.
It really is the modern quest narrative.
Yeah.
And Joyce deliberately maps it onto Homer's Odyssey, but it's like an inversion. The heroes are, well, they're profoundly unheroic in the traditional sense. You've got the three key figures, Leopold Bloom as Odysseus, Stephen Dedalus as Telemachus, and Molly Bloom as Penelope.
Okay, let's start with Bloom, our modern Odysseus. He's hardly your typical epic hero, is he? A middle-aged Jewish man selling advertising. Gentle. Kind. And that immediately makes him an outsider in the very Catholic Dublin of 1904.
A perpetual outsider. And he's carrying this deep loneliness, partly because of the tragedy of losing his infant son, Rudy, years before that really created a distance in his marriage.
Right. And also he knows, quietly, that on this specific afternoon, his wife, Molly, is going to have an affair with Blazes Boylan,
who's depicted as this sort of brash, insensitive character. So Bloom's journey through Dublin isn't about fighting monsters. It's this quiet, almost desperate search for human kindness, for connection, in a city that often seems indifferent or even hostile to him.
Then you have Stephen Dedalus. Some listeners might know him from Joyce's earlier novel, A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. He's the young, brilliant, but tormented artist figure.
He's looking for a father figure, essentially, an artistic or spiritual father, having sort of rejected his own. He's our modern Telemachus searching adrift.
And he's eaten up with guilt. Isn't he that phrase Joyce uses, age and bite of inwit?
Remorse of conscience. Specifically because he refused his dying mother's plea to kneel and pray. He felt it compromised his artistic integrity, but the guilt is crushing him. He feels trapped by Ireland, by its history, its religion. He famously calls history a nightmare from which I am trying to awake.
Powerful stuff. And then the third point of this triangle, Molly Bloom. Penelope, waiting back at home, 7 Eccles Street. She's a singer, depicted as very sensual, uninhibited. But we don't really get inside her head until the very end, do we?
No, her presence is mostly felt indirectly for much of the book. Her affair with Boylan. It's complex. You can read it not just as betrayal, but maybe born out of her own loneliness, the emotional gap left after Rudy's death. Her story unfolds almost entirely internally through memory and sensation in that astonishing final chapter.
Okay, so let's talk structure, because this is where Ulysses gets its reputation for being, well, difficult. 18 episodes, mirroring the Odyssey in three parts. Telemachia, Stephen's story. Odyssey, Bloom's wanderings, and Nostos, the homecoming.
But the truly radical thing, the thing that still feels groundbreaking, is that each of those 18 chapters is written in a completely different style. It's like 18 different novellas jammed together.
Why do that? What's the point of all that stylistic variation?
Well, I think Joyce is making a profound point about reality itself, that it isn't just one thing. It's perceived differently depending on who you are, where you are, what language you're using, your emotional state. The style reflects the content.
Okay, give us an example. Like early on in the Telemachia part with Stephen.
Right. Episode 3, Proteus. This is really your first deep dive into pure stream of consciousness. Stephen's walking on Sandy Mount Strand, the beach outside Dublin.
And his thoughts are just everywhere.
Exactly. It's this dense flow of philosophy, bits of history, what he's seeing and hearing, lines from poems, Latin phrases, memories. It's completely unfiltered mental activity. As a reader, you have to work. You have to sort of piece together the connections yourself.
Okay, so that sets the stage. Then Bloom starts his journey in part two, the Odyssey part. And the styles get even wilder.
Oh, yeah. Take episode 6, Hades. Bloom attends Patty Dignam's funeral. The style is more grounded, but it's this incredibly profound, unsentimental look at death, at burial, the physical reality of it. And crucially, it's where the memory of his own dead son, Rudy, really surfaces with force.
And then you jump to something completely different, like episode 11, Sirens, set in the Ormond Hotel bar.
This one is amazing. It's written to mimic music, specifically a fugue.
A fugue. How does that even work in prose?
Joyce uses recurring phrases, little verbal motifs that weave in and out, like musical themes, sounds from the bar, snippets of conversation, Bloom's own melancholy thoughts, they echo and repeat. It creates this atmosphere of music, but also intense sadness, because Bloom knows Boylan is on his way to Molly at that very moment. The style is the feeling.
Wow. Okay. Then things get much more confrontational in episode 12, Cyclops. This is Barney Kiernan's pub.
Yeah, this is Bloom's big confrontation. He gets into an argument with this intensely nationalistic anti-Semitic character called the Citizen. Bloom tries to argue for a definition of a nation based on, well, love and humanity, basically.
And how's the style handle that?
It goes completely over the top. Joyce parodies inflated, bombastic language like epic myths or bad journalism. Descriptions get wildly exaggerated, almost cartoonish. It's a way of satirizing the narrow-minded bigotry of the Citizen and his cronies. The style itself mocks the ideology.
Which leads us, I suppose, to the climax. Episode 15, Circe, set in Nighttown, the brothel district. This one sounds notorious.
It is. It's utterly bizarre and brilliant. Joyce writes the entire chapter as a surreal, hallucinatory play script. Stage directions, dialogue, characters transforming.
A play script within the novel.
Exactly. It represents the character's subconscious minds erupting. Bloom and Stephen are drunk, and their deepest fears, guilt, desires, they're all acted out in these wild, phantasmagoric scenes. It's disorienting, chaotic.
But something important happens there, right? Amidst the chaos.
Right. Yes. Stephen, in his drunken state, smashes a lampshade and gets into a brawl, and Bloom steps in. He protects Stephen, almost like a father. It's this moment of unexpected care. And right then, Bloom hallucinates, seeing his lost son, Rudy. It's the symbolic meeting of the father and son, Odysseus and Telemachus, in this hellish landscape.
So after that intensity, we get the homecoming, the Nostos. Episode 17, Ithaca. Bloom takes Stephen back to his house for cocoa.
Seems quite domestic after Nighttown.
It is, but the style shifts again, radically. Mm-hmm. It's written entirely in this cold, detached, scientific question and answer format, like a catechism.
Q&A. Yeah. That sounds so impersonal.
I think it's deliberate. After the emotional and psychological chaos of Circe, it's like Joyce is stripping everything back to objective facts. What did Bloom possess in his pockets? What beverage did Bloom prepare? It catalogs the mundane details, almost cleansing the palate emotionally. It forces you to look at the ordinary actions, the quiet connection between them, in a completely different light.
And it sets up the final chapter, doesn't it? The complete opposite. The polar opposite. Episode 18, Penelope. We are finally fully inside Molly Bloom's head as she lies in bed, drifting towards sleep.
And this is the famous part with no punctuation.
Well, very little. It's essentially one long flowing sentence stretching for about 40 pages. Pure stream of consciousness. Her thoughts drift from lovers past and present, her frustrations with Bloom, her memories of Gibraltar, her singing career, her body. It's this incredible torrent of female consciousness.
Raw and unfiltered.
Completely. And it's sensual, funny, earthy, contradictory. It's a monumental portrayal of a woman's inner life.
So, stepping back from the incredible journey through these styles and stories, what's the big takeaway? What does Ulysses ultimately say to us?
For me, a central theme is definitely the heroism of the everyday. Joyce is saying that the inner life, the struggles, the small kindnesses, the thoughts and bodily functions of an ordinary person like Leopold Bloom, that's worthy of epic treatment, that has as much significance as any ancient Greek hero's journey.
Yeah, I see that. And tied into that is his focus on the body and the mind. He doesn't separate them, does he? Intellectual thoughts sit right alongside descriptions of digestion needing the toilet, sexual feelings.
Absolutely. That was radical. He insisted that being human means being both mind and body, fully. Our highest thoughts and our most basic biology are intertwined. You can't understand one without the other.
And the style itself, that stylistic pastiche we talked about, moving from fugues to play scripts to catechisms, that reinforces the idea that reality isn't simple. It's complex, subjective, perceived in countless different ways.
Exactly. There's no single right way to see the world or to tell a story about it.
We should probably mention a couple of those key lines that stick with you. Stephen's angst.
History, Stephen said, is a nightmare from which I am trying to awake. That cry for freedom from the weight of the past.
And then Bloom's simple, profound counterpoint in the face of hatred.
Love loves to love love, almost like a mantra. It sounds simple, but in the context of the Cyclops chapter, it's incredibly powerful. It's his core belief.
And the whole book culminates not in some grand action, but in Molly's memory, doesn't it, as she drifts off to sleep?
Yes, her mind circles back to the day Bloom proposed to her on the Hill of Howth. It's this rush of memory, sensation, and ultimately acceptance. Acceptance of Bloom, of their life together, of life itself with all its imperfections.
Leading to those final unforgettable words.
And his heart was going like mad. And yes, I said, yes, I will. Yes. It's just this massive life-affirming wave of acceptance that ends the book.
It's an incredibly powerful ending after such a complex journey through the day.
I think the lasting impact maybe is the empathy it fosters. When you spend that much time inside someone else's head, Bloom's, Stephen's, Molly's, with all their flaws and thoughts, you start to see the potential depth and complexity in everyone.
It makes you realize there's an entire universe inside every person you pass on the street. That ordinary lives contain epic significance. What a profound challenge Joyce left us with.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.